This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And it's Monday.
It is Monday. Nothing's gone wrong yet this week, so it's a fabulous week.
Except...
oh, we're going to all scratch
here. Oh, I hear you. I think it's you. Not sure. We'll have to check your mic. Yep. It is your microphone. Just before we went on the air, Brent bumped his microphone and took it off the stand. So I'm going to have to take a look at that and see if we can't fix that for you a little bit later on. Oh, boy.
In the meantime, it's nice to have redundancy.
Yes, a little backup. Wow.
All right, nothing but the best, most professional hosts here at Newsmakers. Thank you for joining us at your noon hour. Newsmakers is the only place in the Willamette Valley to hear local talk about issues and ideas and institutions and individuals. Things that affect your pocketbook, your wallet, affect your quality of life, things that are going to happen in our area and to our state. So thanks for joining us. Today, there's so many, I want to go through a lot of things the legislature's doing.
Okay.
It seems like you really have to get out the morning paper and read it every day to see. And even then, it's just a fraction of the bills.
Right.
You know, sometimes we get in a position, we've talked about this, rolling your eyes about the things that legislators find important and that they need to waste time with.
Right. Every day.
You know, okay, so this is how it works. I'm a legislator, say, and somebody comes to me and they're a good donor or they're a good friend or they belong to a nonprofit or a church I belong to. Anyway, there's a connection and they're like, could you do us a favor? You know, we supported your campaign. We really like you, Brent, blah, blah, blah. Hey, could you introduce this bill about licensing bicycles? Or could you do this bill about licensing feral cats? You know, it's just... whatever it is, the favor is. And as a favor, the legislature does it. You know, all right. Well, they're part of their communities. I get how that works. It's not sinister. But sometimes you're like, you know, the legislature's really busy, and this is probably not a statewide thing.
Yeah, right.
This is not real. You know, I'm probably not going to get you a hearing on this, but I'll introduce it for you.
Yeah, like, and some like of the, plastic bags or plastic straws.
No, that's very important.
No, it's not. Not their job.
Anyway, that's how it happens, and that's how we get 3,000 bills submitted by 90 legislators at the Capitol.
Right.
So, and then some of them get traction. Some of them get hearings. And if you get a hearing, that means someone's paying attention.
But even if they get a hearing, it doesn't mean that it's going to go through or they're going to get a chance to vote on it or anything like that, right?
Right. You get it. You know, getting a hearing is huge because a lot of them just die in committee and they don't even get a hearing.
Okay.
So there's no hearing at all, and then the committee that it gets assigned to doesn't even vote to pass it, much less vote it down, and so it doesn't go to the floor. And if it goes to the floor, either in the House or the Senate, it needs to go to the other body. So it's a long haul. But sometimes, you know, we've talked about what are the priorities in the state. You know, cap and trade is a huge priority. It's one of the top two.
Right.
New taxation, got to tax fossil fuels. And I don't know. I'd kind of like, if I were governor, here I'm going to announce my candidacy. Totally facetious, I'm not. But if I were governor, I think one of the number one goals I would want is to raise the average household income of Oregonians.
Lofty.
Yeah. I mean, how about that? How about the fact we've been losing ground against Washington and the national average for, 30 years? Ever since Spotted Owl, Oregon's average household income has not kept up. So that, I think, how about that? How about let's get a record low of people who need to be on food stamps? I remember, was it Kulongoski or was it Kitzhaber? One of them, they were bragging during their administration about they had more people on food stamps than ever. We've qualified. More people are receiving food stamps. I'm like, isn't
that? I think that was Kulongoski, wasn't it?
It's like, isn't that something to be ashamed of?
Yeah, I would think so.
Why don't you run a state where there's so many people prospering that you do not have to be on food stamps?
Yes, that would be the
goal. We have an all-time low for the demand of food stamps. Isn't that something to crow about? That's what I'd like to see. All right, so there's a few things going on. And locally, and of course at the legislature. It makes me laugh about how important and how many public policy decisions there are regarding marijuana, cannabis, and all the things they need to do around that and to consider it.
Well, they're recognizing that it's a huge business, and they want their piece of it.
Yes.
Which is understandable. It's big business, taxable, but on the flip side, it's not legal federally.
Yeah, or across state lines, which is one of the initiatives they're talking
about. Even though Washington has it too, right?
And California.
And California.
So, and they're talking about that. Could there be a way for Oregonians to buy California weed? As if we don't grow good enough stuff already, right?
not from
Brent. And vice versa, of course. Yeah, it has to be a carrier of transportation that's not federally regulated and blah, blah, blah. My question is, why are you even talking about it?
There's
so much cannabis grown in Oregon that the real problem that keeps popping up in the press is, well, we know they're growing more than it's being sold in retail shops.
Yeah.
So there has to be being distributed in the black market. So we still have this undercurrent of criminal activity in cannabis because they're able to grow it, but Oregonians can only consume so much, right? So
that's a true fact.
But I could see, if the governor sees that, wants to get rid of the black market to find a legal avenue to cross state lines so they could export Oregon-branded weed. Wow. It sounds weird. Even though it's been law of the land since 1998 for medical marijuana, of course, just a few years now for recreational, it still sounds weird to be talking about it like it's
normal, every day.
Exporting hazelnuts or something.
Yeah, right. I heard this morning that something that all the Democrat nominees or people that are running for president all have in common, they're all for legalizing marijuana.
Interesting.
Right?
Well, and I'll give them that
around around the country because they recognize that it's a big business. They want their piece of it.
Oh, yeah. I always thought that when California fell and became legal for recreational and the feds started to see how much tax revenue was out there to grab, and now you get this critical mass of states that it's really going to be about, we could be taxing all of that instead of spending money.
And not raising taxes. Yeah.
Instead of spending money trying to prosecute people for it.
Which is pretty much a waste of time.
Yeah. So all these things, Dave, are things that they're talking about the Capitol.
Oh, boy.
Cross state lines, as we said. Set aside convictions. Potential to set aside convictions for activities that are now legal. Cannabis-related activities that are now legal, but people are still perhaps in jail or in the penitentiary for that crime.
Okay.
So that's one. So I talk about save a little bit of money if someone got nabbed because they had a bag of weed that's not legal, now legal.
Yeah,
I don't know. And they're talking about having cannabis lounges become legal, like you'd have a cigar lounge or you'd have alcohol-licensed premises that you could have cannabis-licensed premises as part of the discussion. I didn't realize this, but Oregon was the very first state to decriminalize and make it marijuana way back in the day, and long before 1998. They decriminalized it even before they had medical marijuana.
So you could have a joint on you and you wouldn't get arrested.
Yeah. And affecting the workplace, and we talked about this on Newsmakers a while back, is an initiative to not allow businesses to fire or to refuse to hire somebody because of the result of a positive drug test. With cannabis.
Okay.
So they're saying, hey, it's the law of the land and it's illegal. So it's legal. So therefore, you cannot prohibit someone from coming to work. You can't fire them because they tested positive for cannabis on a random drug test. Or any drug test for that matter. You still can fire them for being impaired. You can still discipline an employee for being impaired.
Okay. How do you prove that, though?
You can't prove it. You can't really prove it.
I mean, you can tell when somebody's on LSD or stuff like that, but you can't. It's hard to prove.
Yeah.
It's kind of almost a he said, she said.
Yeah. So maybe somebody goes out and has three glasses of wine and comes back. I guess they're going to be impaired, but you don't know if it's alcohol, if you don't know.
Alcohol on your
smoked.
Breath? Oh, yeah, right. You don't know. No. You can kind of smell it.
Well, maybe you went to a cannabis lounge. It's just a contact.
Right. Contact. It's in my clothes.
Another one they're talking about is deliveries, allowing deliveries, especially.
That's something that was coming up too. Are they not allowing that? Because I know there's a couple of places that actually do deliver.
Yeah, of course they want to regulate it and what they allow, especially if it concerns a county or city that has disallowed the stores, you know,
okay,
the local options.
So limited delivery area.
But for people who are on medical marijuana,
right?
For people who perhaps are in a hospital bed at their home, right? Suffering from cancer,
sure.
Late stage,
mm-hmm.
A lot of things, and aren't really going to get out, and then they've got maybe a one-on-one caregiver situation. I guess that's one of the situations, and it's another one of these things where regulators hopefully use some common sense and not have to spend undue hours at the legislature arguing about stuff. Like I said, it's still weird to talk about marijuana because it's the law of the land, and it's...
It's only the law of the state.
Law of the state. It's not, our land.
It's
land
not of the land. It's not law of the land.
All right. So coming up, you're listening to Newsmakers with Brent and Dave. A few other things going on in the legislature. Things we want to talk about. Some public records timelines, which is really, I mean, for those of us who love freedom of information and government transparency, that's really important. Want to touch on something from telecommuting and a few other items. So stick with us. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN Salem's Listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem.
All right. Welcome back to Newsmakers. I think we got something done with that microphone.
Yeah.
It doesn't buzz anymore, and I'll try to be less clumsy. I knew I shouldn't have smoked that doobie on the way into the studio today, but I can't be fired.
because of the new regulations, right?
There are exceptions for professions, you know, that involve heavy machinery or things like that. I don't know. Certain professions in which safety is the overriding factor.
I would hope that the drug testing would work on those.
Yeah. We'll go beyond that. But that was interesting in cannabis, how many laws and regulations are going through the legislature right now. I mean, who would have thought, you know, 10 years ago the legislature would spend so much time and have so many bills dealing with cannabis.
Yeah, right.
And the regulation of which and the sales of which, and we cross the borders, and how do they affect the workplace, and are we going to allow home deliveries, and what do we do about these? Are we going to allow hospitality institutions to have a cannabis lounge? Can you imagine? I mean,
wow.
20 years ago, it was just like cigar lounges. Now we're like going in, you know, mixing up your smoke with somebody else's. You get all different kind of high, I guess. All right. Moving right along.
Yes.
So
please.
Another one that is huge again for the workplace, family medical leave. And this is something that Washington and California have instituted or in the process of instituting, where every workplace would have a medical leave, family medical leave available to employees, right? Yeah, the governor has stated it as a priority because she wants it in place while she's governor.
Alrighty then.
Yeah. So, and she wants to prevent any hardship for families and so forth. All right, so here's the thing. Other than just being an unfunded mandate, which we kind of, we've been learning to accept of the legislature, you know, you have to offer sick pay and you have to have predictive scheduling and you have to this and you have to that and so forth.
Right.
They're suggesting that the state administer this thing, right, which is always scary. When I hear the word the state will administer, it gets kind of frightening to me. But the state will administer this thing, family medical leave, and then both employees and employers would pay into it so that it wouldn't be a huge hardship for, you know, somebody has a spouse, say, with a severe medical condition or an accident, a heart attack and something, and they have to be out of the workforce for a period of time, and they want to protect their job and protect their income. How do you take care of your family,
right,
and not lose your job and not have any wages? All right, so let's draw a parallel here. We have unemployment insurance. So most people acknowledge that it exists, but don't really know how it goes.
Right.
So the employer actually pays into a fund in a couple of different ways, and there's state and there's federal. And FUTA and SUTA, federal and state unemployment tax.
Shows up on your check stub.
Yeah.
But you were like, what is that?
That creates a fund.
Right.
And that fund pays for people who are going to unemployment benefits. So we've already institutionalized this as here's an umbrella, you know, here's mm-hmm. a parachute, rather, for people who lose their jobs so that they can bridge to their next employment.
Yes.
And, of course, after the recession, they were stretching those out into years. They were just extending those.
Not sure how they qualify for that because I know mine ran out.
Yeah. And then what happens, because if they don't have enough money in that pool of money, they just raise the rates for everybody. It's very, very cool to have that kind of captive you must buy. And if unemployment is so dramatic that they start running out of funds, out of money that has been paid into by these taxes, these employment taxes, then they can just raise the rates on everybody. So every year you get an experience rating. If you're not an employer, you should know we all get letters saying this is what your rate is for 2019. This is what your rate is for 2018. Based on a number of factors, the need, of course, but more importantly, the experience. If you've laid a lot of people off, just like any other insurance.
So I have short-term disability and long-term disability that my wife and I both pay into. Mm-hmm. I think it's with her employer. But we also have the state and federal unemployment that you were talking about, right? Mm-hmm. And then if, for instance, heaven forbid, I was in a serious accident, couldn't work, and I qualified for the long term, would it be bad for the employer to let me go? I mean, would they hold my job? Should they hold my job?
There's some regulations about that, and there's some periods of time, but...
But evidently, after several months...
There's certain things that are protected, like, childbirth.
Right. Yeah, right.
That's protected. Yeah. You can't fire somebody because they had a complicated childbirth kind of thing. But no, there's also, if you're on long-term disability, by definition, you're expected to be outside the workforce for a minimum of 1 year. So that's going to be a hardship on the employer.
They
hire somebody.
So they would have to hire.
What would KYKN do without you? Right?
They would be soaked.
They wouldn't last a week. So.
Right. Even though I took a week and a half vacation.
Anyway,
it was a struggle.
The news is the family medical leave. So, how it would be modeled, how much would be paid by each party?
How much time is allowed off?
I don't know.
3 months?
I don't know. I think they're still hammering out. And actually, the Speaker of the House, Tina Kotek, said, "Hey, I'm generally in favor of this concept, but there are a lot of things to work out."
There are. Yeah.
So, don't want to report on that, but.
Let me ask you, Brent, how long do you think a parent should be off when they have a child? A month? 2 months? That's a long time. How long should a new parent be out of work taking care of the child?
18 years. That's as close as you're getting out of me.
All right.
18. I don't think I can make that value judgment. You know, because you get the whole spectrum of American society. And so people are like, if you have a child, you've just committed to raise that child. One of you has to be at home. I get that.
There's all kinds.
Then there's the fiscal reality of, there's extended family, there's childcare, there's, it's harder to make it a one salary and so forth.
But a new mom, I mean, should she be off for 2 months? And the dad, I mean, he's helping her, but should he be off for more than a month? I don't know. I think they only give him, 2 weeks now? Or is it 3 weeks? Maternity leave.
Depends on the employer.
Okay.
Depends on the employer. And it's going to be, and people shop those kinds of things and what kind of benefits people have.
That's not one of the questions I asked when I was hired, so I don't know.
So anyway, government's priority, put this family medical leave. It would go into place like the unemployment protection that we have. Of course, workers' comp insurance, everyone's covered by, but that's privately purchased by the employer. And you have Oregon Saves now. I did get a surprising number that 70,000 people have signed up for Oregon Saves.
What?
70,000.
That's
about 65,000 more than I thought would in the entire state. because there was never any obstacles. There aren't any barriers to saving.
Right.
You know, you can walk into any bank or credit union, and they're going to encourage you to save, and they're going to open an account for you.
They want your money.
So now we talked about this a little bit, but the state has a program. If your employer doesn't offer a retirement plan, then they have to administer the Oregon Saves for you. They have to tell you about it and then administer to say, hey, I want to save. So these people who have signed up are saving on an average of $100 a month. I think
that's pretty good.
That's good. I got 70,000 more Oregonians saving. I've been critical of the thing. I don't know if I'm going to jump on this bandwagon or anything, but I'm surprised. You got 70,000 people that signed up for something through their paycheck, and that's the whole difference.
You don't see it.
Disappears before you get to cash your check, and it goes into Oregon Saves and so forth. And anyway, 70,000 people have signed up for that, and the legislature and the governor want to add family medical leave. So then you have family medical leave, you have retirement savings, you have unemployment protection, you have getting work on the job protection, and all these things that come into your paycheck.
Okay, so a lot of those are important that the legislature should be working on. I agree with that.
Okay. Couple things in the news before we go to break. A lot of things in the news, and we'll come back to the legislature. But I want to congratulate T-Mobile. We saw a press release that they ranked number 3 in Oregon for best companies to work for.
Wow, that's a good.
Yeah.
Who's number one?
They've been in Salem for 19 years. They got a call center here in Salem. A lot of people don't realize that. We also have a call center I guess it's Capital One now. It used to be Wells Fargo.
Yes.
So there's a couple of major employers, and actually it's decent training ground, and the wages are not horrible at all. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's an opportunity for people to come into the workforce. And the other thing about T-Mobile, they were in the same rankings, number 1 for career development and learning.
That's a good thing.
So, hey, if they're teaching people how to work in the workplace and giving them job skills, and maybe they build upon that to their next level of career, or they build upon that to move up in the company, that's a good culture.
Yeah.
We'll take it. Usually think of call centers as kind of, you know, somebody in a basement and sweatshops and I don't know.
Last time you were in a call center.
good for T-Mobile, high-tech thing. And yeah, good for T-Mobile. Good to have in Oregon. I know they employ a lot of people. They have instituted a change, by the way, since we're talking about T-Mobile. It used to be if you called customer service in Salem, you did not get a Salem operator. You usually got...
Really?
Yeah, they had...
Went to
I was
India?
Told it was policy because I asked. And I said, well, what state are you in? Well, we're in Georgia.
Oh.
I'm like, I got a call center like 4 blocks away. Why are you answering the phone in Georgia?
Why is it over there?
And they told me, they said, yeah, they don't direct them to the community you're in.
And interesting.
I don't know if it's a privacy issue or I don't know.
Non-biased?
But it's now. They don't do it now. I guess I'm outing myself as a T-Mobile client. But
yes, you are.
I called customer service and I said, hi, this is Susie in Salem. How can I help you kind of thing?
I like it.
So they identified which call center they're at and they're using local people to answer local calls.
Love it.
We'll take it. All right. Some news coming out of Silverton and the urban renewal area. Some news coming out of... talking about the festivals, the music festivals, and Sam Brentano, our county commissioner's in the news. Stick with us. You're listening to Newsmakers with Brent and Dave on KYKN. Salem's listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
It's so nice outside. I don't care that it's Monday.
It is about time. It's just I was talking to somebody today. And it's like it seemed like someone flipped a switch and it's spring.
Yeah.
Not that we'll probably get more snow next week. But right now it feels like spring. And last week it felt like I got to get out of here. Want to get away?
Yeah. Want to get away?
All right. I don't know what to go to next. The public records requests timeline, they're battling in the government and the administrators and this, they're kind of battling this out. And how long it takes. This has been a long consternation of the press and for activists to ask, hey, we want public records on this. I'm a big transparency, Freedom of Information Act person. I don't like the government keeping things secret.
Sure.
And besides, but then they'll
it's
drag
for the government, it's for the people. So it's we should have access to everything in the government.
Mm-hmm. So I'm not a big fan of government saying, well, you know, there's expenses and they drag their feet. Well, they drag their feet, there's something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I just think of the shredder going. That's what you think is going to happen in the back room.
They want this document. Shred it quick.
So at issue is the timeline. And having jurisdictions feel like what has been mandated of them is too much too fast.
Sure.
My question is, this process of responding to a public records request, and you can request it, right? It might be the San Luis Reporter. It might be, you know, United Press International, if they still exist. It doesn't matter. They request it. Every jurisdiction should have a process for this,
mm-hmm.
right? This should not be something that they have to make up anew. And they're claiming that they don't have time to, you know, get everybody trained up to know how to accommodate this and respond to this.
What?
Wow.
Wow. That's dragging their feet.
All right. So the timeline is, in the new regulations, they want, if you file a request, you want acknowledgement within 5 days that we receive your request, we're working on this. And then within 10 days after that, accomplish the request.
Yes.
And if you cannot do it, to have communicated why you can't do it and when you can deliver it and why.
Okay. Right? Why does it take the government 10 days to fulfill your request when I can get the request fulfilled any local company pretty much in a day?
Well, it depends on what you're looking for. You know, if you're looking for something out of 1972,
I'll go look for it myself.
There's going to be some microfiche somewhere.
Yeah.
Nobody knows where it is.
Yeah.
I took a tour of City Hall a number of years back, and some of the court records were literally, this is hard to believe, but they were in, you know, office storage boxes, and they were stacked up on a stairwell in the back rooms of the Civic Center.
What?
They were just stacked because they didn't have a storage room, but they're like, all these court records are in these office boxes.
And they're not scanned in yet?
So I guess scheduling in something that's not every day, scheduling that into somebody's workflow, I'm trying to give them the benefit of the doubt, right? Scheduling a task in that's not in somebody's job description and necessarily is a daily activity. I don't know.
There should be one person dedicated to that. That should be scanning that stuff in.
Yeah. All right. So then my question is, where's the governor? Where's the governor on this? Where's the leadership?
Yeah.
And so leadership is so lacking. And when we have leadership in America, it seems like people just want to tear it down.
Yeah.
And because anybody, you know, with a Twitter account and millions of people have Twitter accounts that probably can't spell their name, it's just we're so quick to attack. Who wants to step up and be a leader and say something that may not be popular?
I wouldn't.
But I am critical. I have been critical of the governor in terms of, and actually the previous few governors. Where's the leadership? That's what we need to solve things, and not just the politics and what have you. So, you know, this governor, she's interested in family leave, raising more money, raising $2 billion and more taxes, and interested in cap and trade so all of us can pay more for our gasoline and to heat our homes with natural gas, and to reduce our carbon footprint. And I don't see any leadership in managing our forests.
No.
I don't see any leadership in eliminating congestion. I don't see any leadership in raising the average household income for Oregon.
No, they just want to tax it more.
Let me give you an example.
Okay.
All right. It's not in today's news, but this all ties in. Oregon passed Measure 37, and that was 2004?
A long time ago.
Measure 37 was land use law, was said, hey, if you write regulations and it takes away value of the land, then you need to be compensated. So whatever government entity, maybe it's a county or a city, wrote a regulation and zoned your property differently, and now you're not able to make full economic use of it before the then they need to pay you. Huge land use thing, and Oregon has fought about. Governor was Kulongoski.
Mm-hmm.
So there was some argument, some with merit, that the measure that passed through the voters was not written all that well. There was missing some definitions and blah, blah, blah. Democrats hated it. Republicans supported it. You know, and then basically the governor did nothing. So every one of those cases, you know what that measure was, Measure 37? It was a land use attorney's full employment act.
Yeah, pretty much.
Every one of those cases clogged the courts. Everyone had to be adjudicated in the courts and argued in the courts. And jurisdictions are different with different judges. And one county might judge one thing and another in the circuit. And then we'll go to the Supreme Court. We're just clogging up and wasting all this time with all these attorneys. So a leader, should we have had one, instead of Governor Kulongoski, would have said, all right, authors of the bill, meet me in the governor's office. Democrat leadership come in, Republican leadership come in, we're going to close the doors, we're going to hammer this out so we don't leave it up to the courts.
Nice.
Okay? You hate the law, and you hate the guy that wrote it, we don't care.
Wow.
Right? Put him in a room. Put him in the room, and so we can say, hey, we don't know what you meant by family. We have five questions that you need to find what you meant when you wrote this dang thing.
Yeah, right.
And then we'll argue about what our definition is, and we're going to argue, and we're going to get it done before we leave the room. And we're going to clean it up, and all three of us are going to agree. We're going to leave, and you know, the authors of the measures, the Democrats and the Republican leadership, even if we hate it, we're going to agree on the definitions. Why do the definitions have to go to the court? Because there was a vacuum of leadership. Ridiculous.
Yeah.
A capitulation of your responsibility as chief executive of the state. Basically going, oh, well, I'm going to let all the judges do it. And meanwhile, they can't do everything else that the judicial branch is supposed to be doing because they're so busy on land use cases.
Yeah.
All right. So there's an example where I'm like, I think in Oregon, we've forgotten what a leader should be doing.
Right.
I mean, what does it look like? I've talked about this a little bit. It goes back to the 90s. And our other government was Kitzhaber, Mr. John Kitzhaber. And then we had this huge project. With the ODOT and the DMV. And it would have made Oregon actually a national leader in technology for managing how we weigh trucks and the weight and measure tax and streamlined and efficiencies in DMV in terms of the technology and one of those one and done type of technology, you know, leaps where you enable people to be able to do this so it doesn't have to go to this person to transfer to that department and go over here. And anyway. It was a huge technological upgrade that they were trying to undertake. Well, of course, it was a $65 million project or something like that that ballooned a $120 million project before the legislature like killed it midstream. All right. So the problem was there was no leadership.
Mm-mm.
There's no leadership because my friend, I had an inside track on this information, was the vendor, the consultant working on the project. He had to answer to an interim person at ODOT. Who answered to an interim person at ODOT, who answered to the ODOT director, who was interim, who answered to the governor. Nobody wanted to make a decision.
What?
There was like, and they waffled. And before they knew it, ODOT was auditing the vendor. The legislature was auditing the vendor. The Secretary of State's office was auditing the vendor. The governor's office was auditing the vendor. And he spent a third of his time on audits instead of doing the work.
Oh.
And where was the governor's leadership? Where was he said, we need this done, we need it done in this price range, and we need done by this date? And where was he, why didn't he have an ODOT director that was permanent, that had prioritized this project that was costing his taxpayers $120 million?
Right.
Complete vacuum of leadership. Folks, it's a problem in Oregon.
Serious. Serious problem.
Wow. All right, so all these things that happened in legislature, some of them I found bemusing. Because and some are important discussions, but really some of the big ticket items about, you know, us supporting our families out there and us being able to move goods and services through a state and quality of life and public safety and all these things. All right. Anyway, that seems like it's time to take a break. We get into a vacuum of leadership and where is it, people? And what is, I guess we have some leadership coming from the governor, but she has priorities that I don't particularly like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, cap and trade amongst the top of them. Okay. All right. We're going to come back. You're listening to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. And we're going to inform you a little bit more about what's going on with your government. Stick with us. We're on 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
I'm still working on Capital Auto to try and, you know, remodel the studio because...
Yeah, well, as long as they're at it.
It needs to be updated. I mean, I think it's from the 70s.
Yeah, I like the...
is that fuchsia color?
Pink.
It's kind of pinkish.
Yeah, kind of pinkish. Maybe it'll cycle back around and be in vogue again.
You think?
There's a word for this.
I don't know.
All right. Well, welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. We're talking about things in the news today in the legislature and in our region, Salem and Kaiser and Marion and Polk counties. Mentioned before the break that County Commissioner Sam Brentano, whom we've had on Newsmakers, love to have him back. And last week, SEDCOR had a luncheon. They did State of the County, where all three county commissioners talk about the county and the work that's being done and what is the state of the county. And
okay.
They tend to break it up and talk about different topics, each of the three commissioners. One of the things Commissioner Brentano talked about, it was the bridge. Of course,
he was a
proponent of the bridge and suggested, you know, I think you mentioned this last week, hey, well, why don't we just leave Salem out of it and cross at the ferry, at the Wheatland Ferry location north of town.
Mm-hmm.
Although it's no panacea in terms of the process to get it done. But it would land in Yamhill County as one issue, because Yamhill County had not been part of this other process, because it was the previous bridge proposal was going to land in Polk County.
That would be quite an undertaking to get from I-5 to the Wheatland Ferry there and across the river and then back down to what, 22?
I think the concept is they're going to use the Brooks exit. So the Brooks gets a lot of traffic, and you got a pretty straight line from Brooks over to the Wheatland Ferry. And really, the goal is to connect people who are eastbound without routing them through downtown Salem. So either people who are going to West Salem, certainly if you live in West Salem, you could use the northern connection to get up to I-5, right? Say you're going to go to Portland. Probably not to the airport, because by then we're going to have commercial air service.
Right.
Okay. But goods and services. If you bought it, a truck brought it. So people are going to bypass and maybe get to the Polk County. Anyway. He brought it up as an idea, at least thinking creatively of how we're going to get it done in the future. So kudos, Commissioner Brentano. I think you should just stay in office until you get it done.
Right.
You know, it's only going to be another 20 years. How old could you be?
Right. Two of them. There should be two of them. One in South Salem and one in North.
Yeah.
To get east and west from I-5 without going through downtown.
My personal goal, and this is not the community's goal, but my personal goal is I don't want 18-wheelers, I don't want all the goods and services traversing the state east-west to be routed through my downtown core, to be routed through the central business district.
Yeah.
So back in the 70s, and as the mayor was talking about, they were talking about straight down, I mean, 22, is Mission Street is timed by 22, go continue it and go right over the bridge and connect with 22 in West Salem. So it's a straight shot. If you're traversing the state, you don't have to be routed through downtown past the coffee shops and restaurants and office buildings and I don't know. Anyway.
I always thought that was kind of strange, but okay.
It is. And it would have been nice if that had happened at the time you had this bypass. And I think it would have made downtown less vehicle dependent, less congested, more friendly. All right. Also local news, Silverton expanding its urban renewal area. We've talked about urban renewal.
Mm-hmm.
If you did not hear the show, go to the podcast, kykn.com, look for Newsmakers Podcasts, and find the show where we talked about the urban renewal districts, urban renewal areas, and explain how that works.
Do you remember the date?
No. No, I don't. Yes. I don't even know today's date. I
guess the 18th. Do you remember the guest?
No, we talked about it.
Oh, okay. Well, then there wasn't any description there then.
All right. We'll find it then. 20 acres in the northern part of town in Silverton, expanding the urban renewal area. So this is a tool. It's a tax leveraging tool to get incremental increases in property taxes to go to specific projects and to rejuvenate an area with blight. And all of these things have legal definitions. Blight has a legal definition. And
the heck is blight?
Blight, yeah, something that's run down, neglected, past its useful
life. So if there's an open field.
That's not blight.
Okay.
No. It's underutilized buildings, so things that have fallen to disrepair.
Okay.
You know, if it's an industrial or a commercial district, it's an industrial or commercial district that has, it's unsightly and perhaps not functional in its original use, and it's dilapidated. That's a good word, right?
Okay.
Anyway, Silverton expanded that, not without controversy, but it is a tool that I like the tool. Not everybody does. I get that. There's two sides of this argument. But Even though I like the tool, it is a tool that citizens have to hold their cities accountable.
Yes.
Because there is room for misusing urban renewal districts, urban renewal areas, either have them last too long or keep too much money from flowing to the other jurisdictions, or, you know, having things in perpetuity that don't necessarily need to be. I think Salem does a good job. So maybe that taints my opinion about the tool, but Salem, by and large, does a good job with urban renewal.
Mostly, for the most part.
Gets jobs done.
There's one that they're still working on, though.
Well, the downtown one is one of the special cases, downtown waterfront urban renewal. We do think that's going to be perpetually open for the Central Business District and for the waterfront. There'll probably always be a need for renewal there, as old as Salem is.
Yeah.
And they've done some great things, including the convention center. And there's some great things on the books. That's how they're going to buy the Union Gospel Mission and redevelop that half block. They're going to buy arrange to buy the building and then buy the building next to it, tear it down, and get it redeveloped. So it's a way for an urban renewal district. It sounds kind of backwards, but they're going to lose money on land use, but create a situation where someone can make money,
mm-hmm.
right? And they'll use that ability to get rejuvenation where there's blight.
Gotcha.
Right. All right. So Silverton did that.
Fancy words.
I do think it's a good tool. But you know, there's this counselor out there that thinks, hey, it should have gone in a different direction and more towards the residential part of town and so forth. But good luck to them and citizens of Silverton. You want to pay attention. Pay attention to how it's used, what the plan is, if the plan gets modified, and who has input and so forth. So great tool, but you have to watch it. All right. Also, this was interesting. They're still talking about the multi-day music festivals. Of course, they mean the country music festivals, right?
Right.
I had some problems with the ones down south, and I've been to the one out in out by Green Peter Lake and so forth. That's Sweet Home.
Sweet Home.
It was really well organized. I had never been to a festival like that before, but there were problems in the country music festival, and they wanted to move it. Marion County said no.
Wow.
Said yeah. Whatever the reasons, they said no. And maybe we'll have a county commissioner on, Commissioner Cameron. Are you listening? And we'll have him on and talk about that decision. But they're talking about it at the Capitol.
What?
And this is again one of those things. Like, why don't you just take that off your plate, Capitol?
Yeah.
I mean, there's certain things that need statewide solutions, and rent control is not one of them. There's certain things that need statewide solutions. And these music festivals should be for the counties. The counties can figure it out for themselves, people, legislators. Just go, hey, you know, we've got cap and trade to worry about. We've got $2 billion to raise your taxes or something. We've got marijuana to worry about. A country music festival on farmland, let the county do it.
Or
the cities. Although they don't typically happen in cities, but just stay out of it, for goodness sakes. All right. Many other things that are going on. We're running out of time here. Tomorrow, we're going to have Peter Fernandez on. So he is the Public Works Director of the City of Salem. So we'll ask him about the sewage spill and the clogged pipes. It's going to be a little scary when we expose how many pipes there are in a city and how old they are. So we'll ask Peter about that. So stay tuned for Newsmakers tomorrow.
Well, hopefully we don't have a big spill like they did.
But meaning to get to telecommuting, and I want to take our listeners' vote on how they feel about daylight savings time. So we're out of here for this Monday. Have a great day. We appreciate you being with Newsmakers with Brent and Dave on 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening.
See you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.